Blog Talk Radio.
Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Got a myriad of topics to cover this morning. I'm just kind of following up on a show we did last week on Contact Report 136 from the Billy Meier case. That contact report is so filled with information, I'm probably going to dedicate several shows to it. Edward Albert Meyer is a one-armed farmer from Switzerland. He's 77 years old now. He lives in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti. His extraterrestrial contacts began in 1945 when an extraterrestrial man named Sfoth landed his ship near Billy's home in Bulach, Switzerland. Sfoth took Billy up some 70,000 meters above the Earth, started to tell him about his mission during this lifetime. Edward Albert Meyer's human spirit form has reincarnated on the Earth since at least 8903 BC, I believe it is. He has been Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And in each lifetime, he taught information in regards to the universal consciousness, reincarnation, the human spirit, controlling our thinking, taking personal responsibility, all of this spiritual information that we cover on this show. But this morning / afternoon, I'll be talking about some of the prophetic material described in Contact Report 136. First of all, we're going to discuss Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was an American actor and politician. He was the 40th president of the United States and served as the 33rd governor of California. In Contact Report 136, it states that Reagan is a man who will cause everything to align through his actions, allowing the old prophecies to be fulfilled, from which it will slowly yet surely result that everything will begin to expand on the earth for the preparation of a worldwide war. The new president will be aggressive and eager to solve all the problems through the use of military force and new armaments. This is in contrast to his predecessor, who is likewise unsuitable. However, in his present position as the new president will also be he who already exhibits some radical and extreme characteristics. Contrary to the erroneous opinion of the U.S. and the worldwide population, Ronald Reagan does not represent the lesser evil, but rather the larger, as the earth will find out. And I remember when Reagan was president and how he would kind of give us these pep talks to go out and get the bad guys. And after decades of meaningless war, it seems that the only benefits to these wars are for the people who are selling weapons. Now, you can listen to this next clip and get a different idea, at least I did, listening to it, about what is going on when we're being goaded to go to war with these countries to allegedly stop the bad guys. Listen, I think there's a little gap here at the beginning of this Reagan speech. Here we go.
Now let's set the record straight. There's no argument over the choice between peace and war, but there's only one guaranteed way you can have peace, and you can have it in the next second. Surrender. Admittedly, there's a risk in any course we follow other than this, but every lesson of history tells us that the greater risk lies in appeasement. And this is the specter our well-meaning liberal friends refuse to face, that their policy of accommodation is appeasement. And it gives no choice between peace and war, only between fight or surrender. If we continue to accommodate, continue to back and retreat, eventually we have to face the final demand, the ultimatum. And what then? When Nikita Khrushchev has told his people, he knows what our answer will be. He has told them that we're retreating under the pressure of the Cold War, and someday, when the time comes to deliver the final ultimatum, our surrender will be voluntary, because by that time, we will have been weakened from within spiritually, morally, and economically. He believes this because from our side, he's heard voices pleading for peace at any price, or better rev than death. Or as one commentator put it, he'd rather live on his knees than die on his feet. And therein lies the road to war, because those voices don't speak for the rest of us. You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard around the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance. Winston Churchill said...
Okay, we hear the pep talk from Ronald Reagan to rally the forces to war, and here we are 15 years later, and we've learned that we haven't accomplished really anything by these wars around the world. So maybe it's time to take a different approach. Part of our difficulty we're facing on the earth is that our expanding populations have destroyed our forests, and our forests are the moderators of climate. And now that we've destroyed the natural world in so many ways, we're starting to see fires and earthquakes. And in 1980, the El Aznam earthquake occurred in the Algerian town of El Aznam. Now, this was a 7.3 on the Richter scale, and it was followed by a tremendous aftershock. And the My Material says, after the presidential election in America, the next world-changing event will be that in Italy, and the next major earthquake will occur at Al Aznam, and 4,000 people will die because of that earthquake. Anyway, in Contact Report 136, we see a bunch of prophecies that were fulfilled. It talks about historical trends like Ronald Reagan revving us up to go fight the bad guys, and then we see prophecies about earthquakes, and also a prophecy about a volcano in Italy, which goes all the way back to AD 79 that caused the destruction of Pompeii. And in line 165 in Contact Report 136, it talks about this earthquake in Italy. The severe earthquake around Vesuvius will only be the beginning of a great number of similar disasters in Italy, but it should also be the starting point for further coming eruptions of the volcano, which will create more destruction in the future. I'm going to play a short clip here. I think it's, well... it's about the volcanic explosion at Mount Vesuvius, and that will just trying to cover a few of these historical trends that are talked about in this contact report. Let's continue here. I think this is another one of these clips that has a little bit of quiet at the beginning. Here we go with Mount Vesuvius.
3 miles below, in a lake of molten rock called the magma chamber, incessant chemical reactions form heavy crystals that fall to the depths of the chamber. The sudden arrival of hot new magma from the Earth's interior sparks an unstoppable chain reaction. To release its pent-up energy, the magma begins to rise, breaking through the weakest layers of rock, causing a wave of earthquakes and tremors. When the magma finally reaches the surface, the pressure suddenly drops. Like an uncorked champagne bottle, a foaming mass of magma and gas up to 1,000 degrees is hurled into the atmosphere. The gas imprisoned in the magma explodes, turning the fiery liquid into a hail of stones called pumice. The column of gas and ash reaches. In 79 AD, Vesuvius suddenly explodes. Among them, Pompeii, and the aristocratic seaside hamlet.
It can again. There's a further, monumental-sized piece of evidence that reveals the awesome scale of the blast in 1780 BC. The 3,700-foot-high cliffs named Somma. 4,000 years ago, on Mount Vesuvius, a colossal eruption ripped the volcano open. Molten rock blasted out of the cone, emptying out the underground reservoir that geologists call the magma chamber. This continued for hours until something literally earth-shattering happened. When the magma chamber emptied past a critical point, the entire mountain collapsed in on itself to fill the void below. The 1780 BC eruption was so massive that it brought down a mountain and emptied 63 billion cubic feet of pulverized rock onto the surrounding countryside. That's enough to cover the whole of Manhattan Island to a depth of 100 feet, or bury the whole of Austria in about an inch, to reveal the shape and size of a human baby in the womb. At Vesuvius, volcanologists use sound waves billions of times more powerful to take a picture under the earth. They detonated small explosions at different locations around the volcano, radiating waves out under the ground. Measuring the speed of the waves revealed whether the rock through which they traveled was solid or molten, hotter or colder than the surrounding ground. Computers mapping the wave movements from the surface printed out a ghostly but terrifying shape.
Behind me here is the very material which buried Pompeii.
The volcanic debris is made up of ash and an unusual white rock.
Really, first impressions are that it's really rather light. And it's again, in a nice close look there, the rock itself is absolutely riddled with holes.
The holes were bubbles of trapped volcanic gas.
Now, this light white rock is called pumice. Now, pumice is magma that's filled with bubbles so much that it'll actually be able to float. And pumice is the only rock.
Pumice is the only rock that's able to float, but what you can't see there because it's just an audio clip is that when they mapped out around Mount Vesuvius, they mapped out giant magma chambers. So sometime in the future, this is going to blow, and it's going to be worse than what happened during the time of the Roman Empire. So this is another one of the tremendous historical trends that the Meyer material talks about, and I don't really get into the prophecies so much, but this Contact Report 136 talks about a lot of this. Next, we're going to talk about religion and Catholicism, but let me bring on, I have a caller here. I'm going to bring on, I think this is Solaris Blue Raven, and she's been looking at historical trends lately, and I don't think she's very happy about these trends that she's seeing. Solaris, are you there?
Oh, hi, Mark. Yes.
Welcome to the show.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. You've been, is it correct to say that you've been a little upset about some of the historical trends that you've been seeing?
Oh, yeah, I'm beyond that. I'm just amazed at what's happening across the board here. And you can watch it play out, Mark. It's really quite interesting when you look at it. I mean, whether it's a planetary event or something that's going on a political level. But, yeah, it's very disturbing because what I'm seeing is nobody standing up and being counted to counteract this evil that's just being spread across the planet like a cancer.
Yeah,
so,
boy, that's a good way to put it. An evil that's spreading across the planet like a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what do we see? We see these incredible fires in Washington State and California. We see Ebola spreading in Africa, and they've ordered, I think the U.S. government has ordered 160,000 hazmat suits to fight Ebola. We're seeing all kinds of earth changes. I had Betsy Lewis, we did a simulcast Wednesday. She's been following the volcanoes. I haven't even been able to keep up with that. But evidently there are earthquakes and volcanoes all over the place. What have you been following? ISIS and this?
I've been following the pattern of what's going on with these groups that are designed to be the front men for control, manipulation, and extermination of different races. It's like a global genocide. And that's what I've been following and kind of tracking right now. And what I'm observing is that we've got people in the D.C. area that are literally encouraging this kind of behavior by not stopping their agenda. I mean, I sent you a link, I think, just a while ago about how the Senate Democrats blocked a bill to revoke U.S. citizenship for American traitors who join ISIS. I mean, come on, that's a no-brainer that you'd want to yank their citizenship, right? And that's just an example of how they're giving a green light and an okay to cause this kind of a chaos in motion, which, you know, it's obvious to me this is an agenda, and it's obvious to me that this is out of control. We have people who aren't willing to step up and be counted to counteract this.
Well, what's interesting, too, on top of all this, supposedly we have this threat, you know, from ISIS, which is probably actually backed by the bankers and the elite who seem to always be starting these wars through their proxies, whether it's a terrorist group or whatever. You know, supposedly we're under this great threat from ISIS, but they leave the southern border wide open. And they just create a perfect channel for them to come in. And from what I hear, there really is a terrorist group, ISIS, which is, I think, Al-Qaeda, that's been relabeled. And I think our military really realizes more and more that this is kind of we're being manipulated into these wars, evidently, because these global elite, they make money. They make tremendous amounts of money off warfare. And they also, I think, which general was it? He was the commander of NATO, basically, for a while, Wesley Clark, and he did a video you can watch out on YouTube where he got a top-secret memo that identified all the different seven countries we were supposed to go into, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Iran, and it was really laid out some, you know, way back in 2001, And I think it was basically the project for the New American Century, which was the neocon goal to take out all these different countries. And it's all been about power and making money for the past almost decade and a half now. So, you know, the reason I do these shows is just to try to wake people up to all this and also try to educate myself. So, yeah, it's just...
Well, certainly appreciate it.
Well, we do. We try.
You're doing this work.
We do what we can do, right? I mean, we can only
right.
do so.
I mean, yeah, we can only communicate the truth for so long, and until you know, sometimes it falls on deaf ears, and other times people do pay attention. But I guess what I'm seeing is just amazing to me how we have people in leadership positions who are literally not taking responsibility on a positive level to do something that's going to benefit the world. Instead, it's just this chaos in motion. I guess I find that most disturbing. And I think there is a correlation between the Meyer material and what's happening right now, for sure, without a doubt.
Yeah, and there's a combination of, maybe the word is incompetence. That's part of it. But there is definitely the elite at the very top of the food chain, I think, are manipulating these events. And the overall goal of the New World Order, I think, right now, is to hollow out the middle class of the United States. And they want to destroy the middle class because those are the thinking people, or were the thinking people, that
mm-hmm.
would be the threat to their global police state. And they want to create this boogeyman. Right now it's ISIS. It was called Al-Qaeda. But the whole goal is to create a police state where they can have complete control. And it'll be interesting watching this play out. I think we have a chance to stop this. But it's going to require a major effort on the average person. You know, we're going to have mm-hmm. to communicate with one another. We're going to have to become active because we're fighting against organizations which in some cases are extremely old and very entrenched. Like we have the Illuminati, for example. You know, we have the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, and these people have trillions and trillions of dollars, and they've financed these global wars for many, many centuries. They also have sponsored religion, and I think that's the other aspect of this. We have in the Vatican this giant monolithic structure, and then also we have these television evangelists, which are making millions and millions of dollars. The next thing that I'd like to play a clip, if I can find it, and this is extremely troubling, on child abuse and the child abuse by Catholic priests in the U.S. And from what this clip says, there have been 10,000 children that have been abused just by Catholic priests in the U.S. So I'll play part of this clip, and then we can talk about this on the other mm-hmm. side. So let's go. I can't remember this.
Tonight's program contains descriptions of child sexual abuse. Viewer discretion is advised.
Provided by the Park Foundation, committed to raising public awareness, with additional funding for this program from the Jerome Foundation in celebration of the Jerome Hill Centennial. Frontline is made possible by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.
Tonight on Frontline.
All those years when I lived in silence, I believed that I was the only one.
In recent decades, More than 10,000 children were reportedly sexually abused by Catholic priests. But years before the headlines, one family broke the story for themselves.
For the 12 years since my brother told me, I've been wondering how he could have hit it so well, and where.
Tonight, filmmaker Joe Cotrera and his brother Paul tell a very personal story.
This was my first sexual experience.
The story of a secret held for 30 years.
I remember him saying, you don't tell anybody about this, it's part of your kids.
Of the abuse of power.
Church moved him around from parish to parish. And this guy was accused of molesting kids.
Of the triumph over betrayal.
The game's over. You guys are not the ones who can preach to us.
Tonight on Frontline, one family's encounter with the hand of God.
Take a look at these tapes. The title, see if you can remember.
It says Paul.
What's this one? Let's see if I can remember this.
Places where it happened. I remember smells. I remember the sun coming through the directory window. I remember the placement of the furniture in the room in the directory. I remember the red leather upholstery. I, for the life of me, cannot remember how long it happened. My guess is it happened over the course of about 4 to 6 months between the spring and the summer in 64. There's parts that you just, you know, I think your subconscious protects you. It just kicks in and you'll want to remember that. It's not the story of my life. It is a thing that happened to me. It's got to be confusing to people. People must wonder, how could you let this happen to you? Why didn't you tell somebody about it? Why didn't you stop it? Why didn't you walk out of the room? I think that it's hard enough for me to understand how I let it happen to me. I mean, it's hard, you know, that's part of what sort of beat myself up for years. You know, I thought I'd let it happen to me. It's that whole power structure, that whole environment that we're in that allows this to happen, and hopefully something like this can explain that.
This is my brother Paul, my father Paul, my grandfather Paul. My name's Joe.
You know, I don't like to be in film.
This is my mother Josephine.
Oh, God.
Her father Joseph. This is Nonna. My grandmother Maria, my sister Maria, Mary, Mother of God. Here's how it all starts. Salem, Massachusetts, best known for its witchcraft trials and executions. Our small pocket of the city was an Italian neighborhood, close-knit, one house tied to the next, by clotheslines, by culture, by bonds of family and friendship. And in that neighborhood, a church, St. Mary's Italian, built in 1925 by the neighbors, a place where everyone met for religion and community, a tribute to lost loved ones. Down the street was our house, built by my grandfather Joseph, my mother's father. It's where we grew up and where my parents still live.
54, you weren't even born then.
It's Paul Maria.
My sister Maria was 10 years older than me, and my brother Paul, 9. You lived in this house, and you came to know it intimately. On every spare wall, Jesus, Mother Mary, and the saints, keeping time, tracking our movements. In the hallway, popes and cardinals kept an eye on the door and the stairs. We lived up those stairs, where the saints made room on the walls for my father's paintings. It was a hobby he came home to after days of factory labor. In this house, there was comfort in details, familiar crevices and paint peels, family hiding places. For 30 years, my brother Paul hid a secret about something that happened to him in Salem, not far from here. And for the 12 years since he told me, I've been wondering how he could have hit it so well. And where. And so I've been looking back at those hiding spots we both knew, and looking for other spots that Paul just kept to himself.
It was a big Italian family. Our grandmother and a couple of our aunts and uncles lived downstairs. From time to time, there were various cousins and our older Sicilian relatives who were sharing the space.
Nonna, she would talk to us in Italian, and she was a love. It was a wonderful, you know, childhood.
Mom had seven brothers and sisters. You know, I'd say for the first 10 years of my life, they all lived in that same house or within a block of each other. You're surrounded by family. It was very protective, very safe, very nurturing. There were all these people who clearly loved you, and you were very much like them. Maybe the downside of it was that once you got out into a world where people weren't speaking that dialect and people weren't your family, you know, you could get into some trouble.
First got married, my wife and I agreed that all my children had to have a Catholic education.
The Italian church, St. Mary's, didn't have a school. And St. James, which was the Irish parish not that far away, they had a kindergarten through high school. I still dream that I'm in that school building. I was all nuns. There were no lay teachers back in those days.
That threat is frightful enough in itself. If you came home and you said, oh, sister, somebody was yelling at me, it wasn't, what's wrong with sister? What's wrong with you? What did you do? As children, we were very passive, and we were just told to do it. We did it.
The May processions, well, every year they would have this procession. They'd get every kid from kindergarten all the way up to the graduating girls in senior class. A long line of kids. Each of their nuns would be standing next to them with a little clicker, keeping them in line. Some girl in the senior class, they'd pick the May Queen. They had these little page boys with a little blue beret-like puffy hat and a kind of little skirt-like thing. If you could get a kid to dress up like that, you could get a kid to do anything. It was the Catholic Church, and everything else was hell. Everyone beyond the bounds of the Catholic Church were doomed. Everything was presented to you in terms of sin. I remember these images of hell. Souls being tossed down into hell, and the flames coming up, and the devil being down there. The vision you had of life that you picked up early on was that you had to sort of tread a narrow path. There's a lot of things that you just shouldn't do, and if you did them and had the misfortune of dying soon thereafter, you were going to be one of those souls that were being tossed down into flames. So it was sort of this game that you played where you committed these sins, and then you'd go into the confessional on Saturday and reel off your sins, and the priest would say, yep, okay, you're safe, go. And then you'd go out and do it again, and come back and say it again. I bought it hook, line, and sinker.
That's a very long clip, but it certainly paints a strange picture of tyranny that, I guess, keeps these children locked into this, like, prison. It's a whole prison matrix of where their consciousness is enslaved to this idea of them going to this hell. They're being abused by their leaders, by the people that should be actually taking care of them. And the Meyer material talks about this, the danger of our religions. And it says it this way, and the events in Italy should be the signs of this coming time. For since ancient times, the most monstrous crimes against earth humanity were committed by this country, namely through Catholicism, whereby the Holy See in particular is responsible for this. Now, the Holy See in Latin is the ecclesiastical jurisdiction of the Catholic Church in Rome. Diplomatically, the Holy See acts and speaks for the whole church. It is also recognized by other subjects of international law as a sovereign entity headed by the Pope, with which diplomatic relations can be maintained. And that clip, it's a rather long clip, and I apologize for that, but it's part of a documentary that talks about 10,000 children that were abused sexually by Catholic priests. And this is just in the United States alone. Solaris, do you have any observations or comments on any of this?
Yeah, it's really sickening. Well, you know, it's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes down to it. But, yeah, he's spot on when it comes down to what's going on with the Vatican and how corrupt it's been in the name of quote-unquote God. But, you know, what I see is man creates God in his own image and does atrocious things in the name of a God, whatever God that is that they are using. But this entrainment and this brainwashing, it's like a disease. Once again, you're dealing with that with all religions, not just with the Catholic Church. But it certainly is one of the bigger ones. And they have been lying and deceiving. And you know, if you look at the Vatican, they're quite wealthy. You know, they've done a lot of devious things behind the scenes. And it's quite embarrassing when you think about these quote-unquote political leaders and what they've been doing to people and how they've been damaging lives.
Well, you brought up entrainment and religion and brainwashing. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Sure. It's a repetitive cycle of a program that they run on what I would call a target, in this case would be the child, which would be negative programming, you know, teaching them that whatever that's happening to them, that they deserve it, or that it's part of the a process of spirituality or whatever. So literally they're entraining these kids to receive and be able to, you know, adjust to the abuse, which is not okay at all, obviously. But that's what the entrainment is. It's repetitive programming, whether it's positive or negative. In this case, it's obviously negative and abusive. And for whatever reason, I'm not sure what's going on, but it's not just the Catholic Church that's like this. I mean, little children are getting sexually molested and abused. I mean, in the Middle East, it's horrific. I don't get what's going on and why they think it's okay to violate a child. I really don't. It's disgusting. And yet it's happening like a disease. And this is what's causing the bigger problems. As these children grow into adulthood, they're having all these psychological issues because that's how they were raised. Therefore, they think it's, you know, appropriate when it's not. So obviously it goes on and on, Mark.
Is this related to the MK Ultra mind control program at all?
I would say it is. I would say it certainly can be because, you know, you have Monarch programming, which, of course, in the old days they used to use drugs or physical abuse and sexual abuse to program their targets. So, yeah, and that's part of the programming process to get them to comply to a certain lifestyle or activity. And, of course, they grow up with that kind of a personality later on. Or sometimes they get so fractured they actually have split personalities, and then they wind up having all these alters because of the sexual abuse, which is notorious with MKUltra. And so, yeah, it's just a real bad cycle all in all.
You mentioned Monarch programming, and I've seen a clip with Britney Spears where she's being interviewed by Diane Sawyer, who I think accidentally said one of her trigger words, which I think was spasm. And then Britney goes into this whole, she starts talking like a little girl, and she has this real thick Valley Girl accent, and she kind of starts to cry. It was really creepy. I don't know. Have you seen that clip?
No, I haven't, but I think you've mentioned that one before. But, yeah, she is a monarch without a doubt. You've got Miley Cyrus. That's another monarch. Madonna's a monarch. All of these people that are in the illusion of, quote-unquote, the entertainment industry are there as they put them up on these pedestals to be an influence on young girls and people in general, and they're really poor role models. And they've all been programmed. They're all fractured women. They're not strong women at all. They're all manipulated, every single one of them.
So who is doing this to these people? Is it the Rothschilds, you know, the Rockefellers? I've heard of the Tavistock Institute as well. There seems to be this weird establishment in place, and it's partly the religions. I can't put my finger on it yet. I'm trying to understand who's behind this global manipulation. Don't you think it's a global manipulation of the public?
Yeah. I see it as one big black spider with a lot of little tentacles. You know, it's basically a beast with many tentacles and a lot of different areas that attach on to other people. A lot of cabals associated. Its entertainment industry is saturated with this type of abusive programming and MKUltra-oriented technology. So they've been doing that and have been involved in it for a very long time. And you obviously follow the money, but you also follow what race is doing it. And, you know, without sounding racist, obviously, who controls Hollywood? You have to ask yourself that question, what race of people is in control of Hollywood? And what race of people is in control of D.C. right now?
Are you saying maybe Zionism has something to do with it?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, and other things as well.
I've always wondered about this because I'm not really up to speed on this aspect of it. But the Meyer material does say that Zionism plays some role in all this.
Right. Well, I think they all do. I think every single one of these, quote-unquote, races have gone to the dark side, so to speak, and they're all about control, manipulation, and power plays right now. So it's not just one group. However, I do see that group out there in California, and I do see them controlling D.C. big time. So you've got the two parallels that are going back and forth. You've got people here who have dual citizenship that shouldn't have it in the United States, that are in Congress and in government, that literally need to be an American citizen. They need to give one up, okay? So we have a lot of issues here, but it's all part of that toxicity that's just like, once again, a virus across the board.
I have one more clip here, and the beginning of it's very, very quiet. We're kind of running out of time. I want to make sure we can at least listen to part of this, so I'll start playing this clip. You can... I'll turn it down. There's just a bunch of noise in the beginning. And it's really, it's John Lennon. And he, you know, way back then, I mean, I can't believe this guy. He saw through all of this back, you know, 20 years ago, longer. And he, his whole thing was to try to promote peace. And eventually, I guess they just had to kill him as well. You know, these global assassinations are also done on purpose. This isn't just random. These assassinations like Kennedy, John Lennon, anyone that will promote peace, try to pull the world together, is usually killed off. It's pretty scary. Let's listen to a little bit of this clip, and then we can chat about this as well. So,
do, you know, on how, what they think they're doing. I'd be very pleased to know what they think they're doing. I think they're all insane. You know, but I'm liable to be put away as insane for expressing that. Yeah. You know, that's what's insane about it.
Yeah. Every country's had a violent revolution for one reason or the other. Not one of them has the freedom we're all talking about. So we're saying give peace a chance, you know, like nobody's ever done it before. And it's not a matter of, we're not thinking in terms of 10 years, we're thinking in terms of peace forever, you know. And that everybody's talking about now. I want peace now. We can get peace now if we want it now. And the left wing talk about giving the power to the people. You know, anybody knows that the people have the power. All we have to do is awaken the power in the people. The people are unaware. It's like they're not educated to realize that they have power. They put the politicians in power. They vote for the local mayor. The people do it. But the system is so geared that everybody believes that just the father will fix everything. The father being the government. Government will fix everything. It is all government's fault. You know, shake a fist at the government. Well, we are the government. The people are the government, and the people have the power, but we must try and make them aware of this.
And Yoko was telling me about this great old ancient Chinese book, which tells you how to fight the battle, you know. And it says the battle is always lost within the castle, you know, like America's falling within, not from within. The commies coming, it's falling apart inside. And this book on how to fight the good fight says that never have every door shut. The enemy then will...
Everybody's
going to come round and attack. But if you leave one door open, you know where they're going to come in, and then you get them. So intuitively, we're doing that. And we leave a door open. They're so busy shouting about haircuts and genitals and naked and long hair that they concentrate their ammunition there. We know where it comes from, and we get on with the job of selling and or doing whatever we're doing. And I believe that. You leave the door open, man, and that's where the door they'll come in, you know.
As a Beatle, we made it, and there was nothing to do. You know, we had money, we had fame, and there was no joy, you know. And then I met Yoko, and she was making it as an avant-garde artist, and we both tried to find something we had in common, a common goal in life, because we couldn't, she couldn't rock and roll with me, and I couldn't avant-garde with her. I mean, we can, but that's what we thought at the time. So we decided the thing we had in common was love, and from love came peace. So we decided to work for world peace.
And how do you do that?
We do it by the advertising method. We believe that today's society, advertising is the thing politicians use and commercial companies use. The Beatles use it. John and Yoko should use it. Our product is peace.
Of less words and more peace. I think the only way to do it is Gandhi's way. And that's non-violent, passive, positive, or whatever they called it those days. You know. We're selling it like soap, you know. And you've got to sell and sell until the housewife thinks, oh, well, there's peace or war. That's the two products. Peace.
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 Peace. Peace. Peace in your mind, peace on earth, peace at work, peace at home, peace in the world.
It's to try and get people orientated to think peace, like eat for peace, breathe for peace, and dance for peace, and make love for peace.
So the global elite didn't like John Lennon's message. The global elite doesn't like peace, because peace, for one reason or another, doesn't make enough money for these people or give them the power they want. In Contact Report 136, lines 181 through 183, it states, in New York, it will happen that in the second week of December of this year, a man who is well known by the name of John Lennon will be murdered by a firearm. His character is that he is a musician, and he was formerly a member of the Beatles group. He will be murdered by a religiously misguided one named Chapman, who moreover suffers from delusional ideas caused by his erroneous religious teachings, as this will appear more and more in the extreme with those who have succumbed to the delusional religious cults and sects in the United States of America. So, Solaris, what do you think? I mean, it's funny. John Lennon was killed. Bob Marley was killed. Seems like anyone that wants to talk about peace and people working together suddenly just ends up dead. It's kind of strange.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, it certainly is, and it's still perpetuating. And what I find interesting is that prediction that was made. So it's pretty interesting indeed. But, yeah, I mean, to me, it's like I don't think peace will be established until mankind goes extinct, to be honest. I mean, unless we change the course big time. I mean, I just see it as this out-of-control Mordor situation where it's just like people are getting off on hurting each other and harming each other and mass judgment, mass this, mass that. I mean, literally, it's insanity in motion. And I give a lot of respect to those of us who maintain the light and run the energy for higher consciousness here on the world, like yourself and even myself, because I don't see many people able to do that, quite honestly, Mark.
I
think there's something to be said about it.
It's a weird, strange world we live in. We have corruption, you know, just profound, profound corruption in our religions, in our governments, and there's some unseen hand behind the scenes that literally will kill people that step up and want to talk about this sort of stuff. We've seen John Lennon murdered. This same contact talks about the murder of Diane, Lady Diane. I haven't got to that yet. There's so much material in here. It's really difficult to cover it all. One of the things that I find really interesting, too, and we're running low on time, we only got about 10 minutes left here, is our climate. Our climate is changing. The most logical thing that I've seen is, of course, it's related to the sun to a degree, and also the fact that we've destroyed our forests, which are the moderators of our climate. But let me read a little bit what the Meyer material says about what's going on with our climate. Another event goes into action with the coming climate, which will already be at hand in October, and which especially concerns the northern hemisphere of the Earth. I already explained to you earlier in this specific case that the whole Earth will slowly become a flood-prone area. However, the climate will also continue to change in such a way that icy cold weather will fall over the regions of the Earth. Now, this is interesting because this was talked about in 1980. Because a new cooling time inevitably approaches, whereby the overall view of the Earth will once change once again. Now, listen to what it says about animals. It says, in the north, completely domesticated birds already begin annually to draw to the warmer south for the winter. And already in hundreds of years, these feathered animals will no longer have a home in the north. Boy, I hope they're wrong about that. It sounds like many of our birds will just stay in the south in coming years. Today, many animals still living in the northern areas migrate, on the other hand, to the south, already begin to change themselves in their anatomy. We'll start to see these birds and other animals change their anatomy to survive in this extremely cold weather. Now, in order to adapt themselves to the new and approaching cold climate, many kinds will begin to change themselves into other forms, which can be determined soon by earthly scientists, whereby they can exist in the new climate. Thus, the picture of the animal world will, at other times, change itself, and new forms of faunal life, so there'll be changes to the plants that occur as well. New faunal life will revive the soil, all change to the animals and the plants, will revive the soil, while the earth human being must also take upon himself many changes and cannot avoid the renewed change. The signs of the times will increase continually, whereby these signs, unfortunately, are of a negative form. So the Meyer material is talking about this extremely cold time which will come over the earth. This prophecy was made in 1980. Now, I also have a clip, and I'll let everyone make their own decision on this clip, because I just don't know what to make of this John Holdren guy. He's senior advisor to President Obama, and I think they mix truth and maybe a little bit of not so truth as well. But it's an interesting clip, and it talks about the polar vortex, and we've only got about 6 minutes left. So assuming that I can find this clip, I find it interesting. Last year in the winter, we had what was called the polar vortex, which froze the Great Lakes completely. And this may be the clip. Well, let me start with this clip here. This may not be the exact one that I wanted, but we had the Great Lakes freeze over, and literally shipping stopped in the Great Lakes. And we had this massive snowstorm which hit the whole southern part of the United States, where people were trapped in their cars, et cetera, et cetera. Let me see if I can at least play this clip. This may not be the exact one I wanted, but
11 degrees below zero right now in Chicago. And take a look behind me. You can see the vapor rising from Lake Michigan here. It's that cold. And overnight, we got new video showing just how cold it is here in the Midwest. Take a look. Oh, God. When it gets this cold, black ice is king.
They need to get somebody out here to stop this.
It's just one of the countless ways the frigid polar vortex is crippling more than half the nation.
If you can stay in today, stay in all day today.
School closings as far south as Atlanta. The streets in central Illinois completely deserted. The wind chill there, a mind-numbing negative 30 degrees. Try opening the window in Chicago and you'll get this. 35 below zero, right in your living room. It's so cold, Lake Michigan looks more like a hot tub. The water outside Chicago, warmer than the frigid air, and ice already forming along the banks.
This right here is just more than we expected at all.
So cold, many car batteries just aren't working.
With the cold weather, it's not going to start.
A water main break in sub-zero Columbus, Ohio, turning streets into steaming rivers. crews scrambling to clean it up before it freezes solid. In southwest Michigan, lighthouses transforming into Arctic ice castles. And this fountain left running outside Minneapolis, now a mountain of ice. Overnight, a Chicago family trapped in their car for more than 15 hours.
We were calling for help, and it was no one there to help us.
On that same highway, ice road nightmare. Truckers everywhere praying they won't be next.
I'd freeze to death before I got help.
And in Indianapolis, in the middle of the snowstorm, a young mother giving birth to her first child by herself at home early Monday morning.
Her due date was not until the 21st. I think she wanted to see the blizzard. She didn't want to miss out.
Mom and baby are doing okay this morning. Great news there. Amazing story. Take a look at what happens when I spray some water here on this bus stop. Okay, I've been wanting to...
Okay, that... So, Larissa, I wanted... we're running low on time, so I wanted you just have the chance to tell everyone about your website and your radio shows and that sort of thing. And then I'll play one more clip.
Oh, sure.
And then I also want to thank you for joining me this morning on short notice, too. So,
my pleasure, Mark. Thank you for inviting me. And my website is Night Shadow Anomaly Detectives, and my books are on Amazon.com. And my radio show is Raven Stars Witching Hour tonight, 12 midnight Eastern Standard Time, Revolution Radio, and also Hyperspace on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Dark Matter Radio Network.
Who is your guest this evening?
Remember? James Bartley tonight. He's going to be talking about my lab. Yeah.
My labs. Okay. I have more on the polar, more on the polar vortex here, and then we'll just finish out the show.
Okay.
If you've been hearing that extreme cold spells, like the one that we're having in the United States now, disproves global warming, don't believe it. The fact is that no single weather episode can either prove or disprove global climate change. Climate is the pattern of weather that we observe geographically and over the seasons, and it's described in terms of averages, variations, and probabilities. But a growing body of evidence suggests that the kind of extreme cold being experienced by much of the United States as we speak is a pattern that we can expect to see with increasing frequency as global warming continues. And the reason is this. In the warming world that we're experiencing, the far north, the Arctic, is warming roughly twice as rapidly as the mid-latitudes, such as the United States. That means that the temperature difference between the Arctic and the mid-latitudes is shrinking. And that temperature difference is what drives what is called the circumpolar vortex, which is the great counterclockwise swirling mass of cold air that hovers over the Arctic. As the temperature difference between the Arctic and the mid-latitudes declines, the polar vortex weakens, and it becomes wavier. The waviness means that there can be increased, larger excursions of cold air southward, that is, into the mid-latitudes, and in the other phase of the wave, increased excursions of relatively warmer mid-latitude air into the far north. Computer models tell us that there are many different factors influencing these patterns. And, as in all science, there will be continuing debate about exactly what is happening. But I believe the odds are that we can expect, as a result of global warming, to see more of this pattern of extreme cold in the mid-latitudes and some extreme warm in the far north.
Well, I want to thank everyone that's going to listen to this archive. I want to thank Solaris for coming on at short notice again this afternoon. And I'll be on tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern on Revolution Radio. I'll be talking to James Horak this evening and a new guest who has a strange name, Wing X Zero. So it should be exciting. Have a good day, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Larry.